Okay, so we turn to our regularly scheduled program of the fifth seal being opened. We're in Revelation 6, and Sister Roseanne, could you read verses 9 through 11, please?
Hey, Rick, Wincy wants permission to record.
That's interesting because I thought I had granted it to her, so I will do that again. Okay. Thank you.
Revelation 6, 9 to 11. When he opened the fifth seal, I saw under the altar the souls of those who had been slain for the word of God and for the testimony which they held. And they cried with a loud voice, saying, "How long, O Lord, holy and true, until you judge and avenge our blood on those who dwell on the earth?" And a white robe was given to each of them, and it was said to them that they should rest a little while longer until both the numbers of their fellow servants and their brethren, who would be killed as they were, was completed.
Thank you. And I have to say, I didn't quite hear. Did your translation say little season or just season in verse 11? Or maybe even a different word, time?
Yeah, it didn't say season. It's that they should rest a little while longer until both the number of their fellow servants and their brethren.
Okay. All right. So the friends, the word for season is chronos, and the word little is micro, but it's not in the better, older texts. Does anyone have something different than that? Okay. So we discussed this through to verse 11. That's where we had left off. Did anyone have a comment or question on 9 or 10, verses 9 or 10? Okay. We talked a lot last week about God's retributive justice, and we looked at quite a few verses and talked about how the righteous blood or innocent blood that had been shed from Abel through to Zacharias, who was killed between the porch and the altar, as Jesus described it in Matthew, the 23rd chapter. All that blood, all that responsibility, all that willful guilt, as it were, partially willful guilt, was expiated with the tragic judgment on the nation of Israel, which culminated in about 70 AD, if you will. You could stretch it out a little further, but nonetheless, the diaspora followed shortly thereafter. And by 135 AD, Hadrian, the Roman Emperor Hadrian, had forbid Jews to live in the land. Israel got renamed Palestine, and we know the temple was destroyed and has never been rebuilt. So, but that chastisement has been fulfilled and over and accomplished. The 1845 years of God's disfavor was culminated in 1878, and Israel was restored to the Lord's favor. And as in Isaiah 40, verses 1 and 2, her warfare is accomplished, and Jerusalem's warfare is accomplished, and we should speak comfortably unto her with the Lord's promises, encouraging them to have faith in the Lord. So, that being said, we talked about how this justice, the avenging of the blood of the innocent ones who have been killed and martyred during the Gospel Age period, would be required of nominal spiritual Israel or Babylon, Christendom. And that is the part of what the Armageddon destruction and the seven last plagues poured upon the nominal systems That's what that accomplishes in part, besides removing them. It's, they also will, that will be the expiation for, satisfying God's judgments against the sins against, light or light of conscience, if you will. So that then mankind will be able to come up in the, resuscitation, and they will have, those, there will be some punishment undoubtedly for some willfulness, but the great satisfaction of God's justice will be complete. Jesus' blood, the ransom price for all Adamic weakness, and any part that was willfully done against the light of conscience will have been expiated. And so that's what we talked about pretty much last week. I'm sure there was more, but I thought that got us to the verse 11 to open the. So with that, were there any comments on what I was just saying or stir up anything? Okay. So verse 11, white robes were given unto every one of them, and it was said unto them that they should rest yet for a season or a chronos until their fellow servants also and their brethren that should be killed as they were should be fulfilled. What's the white robes represent? Burnett?
Well, white robes represent purity, and of course we have the robe of Christ, which is his perfection, which covers our imperfections for those who are spirit begotten. So in this verse, we're talking about the saints who have finished their course faithfully. So they're given white robes, and they're told to rest for a season till the fellow servants or brethren finish their course as well. So the question that they ask, how long, there's wait a season, because there's still the finishing up, the completion of the church, and then the persecution will end, and the glorious kingdom will be established over.
Okay, thank you. Good. Ruth?
I was thinking it would be a surety that they were faithful and that a crown was laid up for them.
All right. Very nice. Sister Debbie.
You know, I was kind of thinking along the same line as Ruth, because these robes are given to them after they had died in the cause of Christ. So it's not like the justification that we have. We have robes of justification. These are probably like the marriage feast robes, maybe the ones that show that you have already completed and fulfilled, you know, like Ruth said, the faithfulness. So they're different from the robes of justification. Over.
All right. Well, we appreciate that. Let's read Revelation 19 and verse 8. Let's see. Sister Connie, would you like to do that for us, please? Revelation 19, 8.
And it was given unto her that she should array herself in fine linen, bright and pure, for the fine linen is the righteous acts of the saints.
Amen on that?
That's what I thought of the robes being the righteousness of the saints.
Okay. So that does make a distinction. I think Brother Russell, if I remember correctly, brings out that this is their righteousness, because this is the 144,000 and they have proved faithful. So it's no longer the imputed righteousness of Christ. Okay, good. And then, Sister Connie, while you're reading there, maybe down in verse, read 19:14.
19:14, okay. Oops, I went to 20, okay. 19:14. And the armies which are in heaven followed him up upon white horses, clothed in fine linen, white and pure. And this is seems to be victorious overcomers.
Okay.
White horses and their fine linen.
Okay, very good. So, again, an emphasis, this would be the 144,000 with the clear, clean doctrine, like we had in our first seal, a white horse, clear, pure, clean doctrine when the apostles were still on the scene. But nonetheless, that's not the time frame. This is still a future time frame, but just a connection. White horse. But you see, the ones riding it isn't like that first seal, man with a bow looking to conquer. This here is the 144,000 with the Lord, and they will be exacting that vengeance on the nominal systems that we just talked about. But nonetheless, here's our white robes. It's their justification. They're just, actually. They're just. All right, good. Any other comments on the white robes angle? Brother Dan.
I was just going to say that this speaks of armies, so we think that this represents those who we're talking about in the sixth seal, those who have finished their course. They have their own righteousness because they've finished their course faithfully, and also those sealed but are still on the earth, those final feet members. So two parts, the armies of the Lord making up the 144,000. Over.
Okay, very good. Thank you. Good. Sister Debbie.
Just wanted to ask, I don't know if anybody else is having problems, but I'm having a hard time hearing Brother Dan. So.
Well, I'm hearing him well, but I don't know about others. Anyone having a hard time hearing Brother Dan?
Sounds like he, to me, it sounds like he's in a, you know, box or something. That could be me. Sorry.
It's me too.
Yeah.
And Sister Connie, I was having a hard time hearing. I had to turn the volume up.
Me too.
Poor Brother Dan and Sister Connie, because Bill chastises them for being too loud. So they turn it down, and then they turn it down and we can't hear them. And all right. See what you can do, Brother Dan. A little louder. You don't want to miss those fine comments coming from the Manette home. All right. Back to our Revelation 6. We've got the faithful saints of that era, the fifth church, as it were, being told that they were faithful, and yet the vengeance will have to wait till their fellow brethren suffered in a similar way. We hear you pretty good, Brother Chris. So what we see is that the rest of the body of Christ will have to prove faithful in completing their covenant of sacrifice. Not everyone dies a martyr, directly, but everyone of the saints have to fulfill their consecrations of being dead to self. As the Apostle Paul writes in 1 Corinthians 15, I die daily. So there's a sense that our living sacrifice, Romans 12:1, you're all familiar with so well, that has to be completed, whether there is a literal martyrdom or not, is not necessary to be found faithful. Any comments on any of that? Sister Debbie.
I just had a question. It says fellow servants and brethren. Is there a difference? Is this like the church and the great company? Or, you know, because I know those in the church are going to be resurrected or already resurrected, but he separates it like fellow servants and brethren. So I'm just wondering who these are. Over.
Okay. Good question. Brother David, then Sister Alice.
I don't have an answer to that question, but I was, on your comment, I was thinking, Brother Rick, about the willingness of being beheaded. In other words, having Christ as the head and making a conscious decision to die to our own wills daily. And the Lord delivers the experience that we should have to deliver that condition with whatever experience it holds for each and every one of us. Over.
All right. Thank you, Brother David. Appreciate that. Sister Alice and Brother Dan.
For some reason, I always had the little season being Kronos, 360 years from 1518 to 1878, the resurrection of the sleeping saints began, and they would receive their own white robes. But you said that that is not the correct translation.
The word little is omitted in the better manuscripts.
So. Is season Kronos?
Yep.
Is that the same as Kronos season?
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
So would that fit the 360?
Okay.
1878?
So this is the suggestion I like because we do think it's the fifth stage of the church. And from my mind, the fifth stage of the church started in 1367. But if you add the 360 years of a Kronos, now Kronos, a time, is 360 days, a day for a year. So if you add 360 years to 1367, when we start this fifth state of the church, you come to 1727. Not satisfying. But the suggestion is that the saints were faithful during that fifth stage of the church, which concluded about 1517, because that's when the sixth stage of the church started with Martin Luther nailing the 95 theses on the door of the church at Wittenberg on October 31st. So, it's as if the Lord is saying at the conclusion of the fifth stage of the church, because you've been persecuted throughout your fifth stage of the church, at the end of the fifth stage of the church, all you who suffered get white robes and you have to rest though until, your fellow servants have suffered. So if you add the 360 to the 1517, that's where you come up to 1877 and the following year, the sleeping saints were resurrected. So that then the sleeping saints, which would include the saints of this fifth stage of the church and all those preceding, and even the sixth stage, they would be resurrected in mass. They would no longer have to rest. They would be united to their Lord in glory. And thereafter, you do have, it's true, you have the rest of the brethren, the body, the feet members of the Christ would still have to suffer. That's true. But the sleeping saints are no longer suffering. They get their reward. And we know that from other lessons. So I like that suggestion, not only because it keeps the timeline of the seven stages of the church in sync, And not only does it harmonize our use of Chronos for our 360-year period, but it does make sense that it would be at the conclusion of that fifth stage that the Lord would reassure all those who died faithfully in the fifth stage that they would have that rest. If you had it at the beginning of the fifth stage, for example, it would be like saying, well, everyone up to this point had been faithful. But rather, the Lord saying it at the conclusion of that fifth stage. So, I won't say anything more on that, but we'll invite comments, and then we'll come back to your comments, your questions, Sister Debbie. Any comments on the Chronos aspect? Does anyone have anything different on that? Brother Chris.
I don't have anything different. It's just that from the beginning of the fourth stage of the church, 1157 plus 360 does bring you to 1517. So we do have a connection there, but it kind of skips right over the fifth stage of the church. Over.
Yeah. And we do use that in a sense because, Babylon didn't repent, and so the Great Reformation came. That's true. Okay. Then we'll leave it at that. If anyone, you know, cogitating on it, comes up with something more or different, we're certainly happy to entertain it. So back to Sister Debbie's question. Brother Dan, you're on the list.
Brother Rick, the way I read verse 11, it seems like it's just talking about one class. I'll read it from that they should rest yet for a season until their fellow servants and also and their brethren that should be killed as they were should be fulfilled, or even as these saints prior to these saints of the fifth stage of the church, the rest of the saints have to have the same experience. They have to finish their course faithfully. And so this is, when we're talking about those who have white robes, it's the faithful. It's, those who are part of the 144,000. And so the rest who will make up the 144,000 have to have the same experience. And once they finish their course faithfully, then the church class will be complete and the marriage will take place. They won't have to wait anymore. The persecution of the church will come to an end, and the kingdom will follow. So, yeah, so I see it that saying a lot of words just to say, I think it's just talking about this one class. Even though it says servants and brethren, I think both are just referring to the faithful who will make up the 144,000. Over.
All right. Thank you, Brother Dan. Brother Michael, and then Brother Adi, and then Ruth.
So my translation has it stated differently. I'm not sure if this is the right way to look at it. It says, then, with respect to the brethren, it says, and they were told to rest a little longer unto the number of their brothers. Then it says hyphen, their fellow servants of Jesus who were to be martyred had joined them. So if I was to read this correctly, it was basically emphasizing who these brothers are, that it ones that basically are fellow servants of our Lord Jesus Christ.
Okay, thank you, Brother Michael. Appreciate that. Brother Adi.
Same thought as Brother Michael. The NIV removes the word and says until the full number of their fellow servants, their brothers and sisters. So it doesn't separate the group. And the fact that it says full number, there is a number that is considered to be the full number. So it would be, I would think it's the same, the Bride of Christ, 144,000 over.
All right. Very good. Thank you. Good. Ruth.
There's a similar phrase in Revelation 19:10.
Okay.
And I fell at his feet to worship him. And he said unto me, see thou do it not, I am thy fellow servant, and of thy brethren that have the testimony of Jesus, worship God, for the testimony of Jesus is the spirit of prophecy. When we interpret this, we interpret it as the angel that's showing him the horses, the white horses, and the bride. And he says, which we think is Brother Russell, he says, I am thy fellow servant and of thy brethren. So it seems like it's the same class. Over.
Okay. Appreciate that. That's good. Good cross-reference. Brother Adi.
And just to add, the great multitude, if someone were to think that the fellow servants is the great multitude, that didn't have a full number. In fact, it says before me was a great multitude that no one could count. Over.
Okay. So true. Very good. Brother Michael, is your hand still up or a new hand? Okay. I'll get her. I'll get it down. Okay. I was just taking a look at our Matthew 24, just that one expression there. I'll read it. Ties in good with what Ruth just said as well. 24:45, who then is a faithful and wise servant whom his Lord shall make ruler over his household to give them the meat in due season. Blessed is that servant if I'm so doing. So I like that because he's a faithful and wise servant, and he's giving the fellow servants or household what they need to have. So all right. Good. Sister Debbie, okay on that? All right. All right, good. Then back to our Revelation 6:11. So I think that verse 11 is completed. Did anyone have any more comments on the fifth seal? Or Chris?
We'll cover it more in depth, but just back on that season, when we get to the trumpets, we'll see that there's a space in the fifth trumpet that sounded, and that will be akin to 150 years. That brings them to 1517. So I know we'll cover that with greater detail. So we do get a sense of a time frame with that season. Over.
Yes. Yes. And when we went through that study on dating the churches, it was really nice. It was very satisfying that we had all these different lines of evidence that if we didn't have the start date for one, we had an ending date for one, which then applied the starting date for the next and so on. So it had a nice, satisfying, conclusion. That's very good. All right. Let's read the sixth seal. Sister Debbie.
Just one more quick question, about the souls who are slain. Are these just those who are slain during the fifth seal, or is it from the first seal all the way through to the fifth?
Over. Well, reasonable minds can differ, but I think it's all of them through the gospel age up and through the end of the fifth seal. I can't see why the Lord would leave the others out. Okay. So, Sister Cheryl, would you read in Revelation 6:12-17, please?
And I beheld when he had opened the sixth seal, and lo, there was a great earthquake, and the sun became black as sackcloth of hair, and the moon became as blood. And the stars of heaven fell into the earth, even as a fig tree casteth her untimely figs when she is shaken of a mighty wind. And the heaven departed as a scroll when it is rolled together, and every mountain and island were moved out of their places. And the kings of the earth, and the great men, and the rich men, and the chief captains, and the mighty men, and every bondman, and every free man, hid themselves in the dens and in the rocks of the mountains, and said to the mountains and rocks, fall on us, hide us from the face of him that sitteth on the throne, and from the wrath of the Lamb. For the great day of his wrath has come, and who shall be able to stand?
Any opening comments?
I will tackle it a little bit.
Good.
The sixth seal, we would relate it with the period of the sixth messenger, 1517 to 1874. The earthquake, it's the time period of the French Revolution. And the sun usually represents the gospel, so it's darkened and sackcloth is usually mourning. And the moon became blood, it seems, is usually related to just seeing the bloody sacrifices of the Old Testament. And so far we're seeing this all relates to papacy and their reign, and it's the time of the end in 1799. So papacy is falling. The stars of heaven are the false churches. And it seems to be a time of trepidation where men are realizing it and they're wanting the systems to cover them and hide them and protect them. But since it is the time of the end, that's not to be. So it's the work of the sixth trumpet seal, the sixth seal. And I'll leave it at that. Over.
Okay. Thank you. Further opening comments. Ruth.
Just a little variation that it was during the French Revolution that they stopped using the Bible and they went completely secular in France. And so the sun, very similar to what Cheryl said, the sun became black. They looked at it as black and they looked at the Old Testament as just bloody, like was already brought out. And the stars of heaven, the clergy during the French Revolution was lost all their respect, and so it's just a fine point. Over.
Okay. All right. Very good. Further comments. Overall comments. Sister Debbie. Oh, Brother Michael.
I just crashed, so I didn't catch what Sister Ruth said about the moon.
Old Testament, bloody types and shadows are rejected during the French Revolution, along with the rest of the Bible.
Thank you.
Mm-hmm. Brother Michael?
Just a question, and I'm not sure if I'm understanding this correctly. If the sixth seal was broken during the sixth phase, which ran from 1517 to 1874, and the earthquake, which represented the French Revolution, happened. Okay, never mind. Sorry, I had my numbers right. I'm sorry. Ignore me.
No. No, we appreciate that. So I'll chip in a few thoughts here before we go verse by verse. That the sixth seal is open. It is during the sixth stage of the church. But it's at the time of the French Revolution in 1789 that the narrative picks up, which is in the sixth stage of the church. It's toward the latter end, but the sixth stage of the church was a very, very jam-packed, busy stage. So we think these verses are narrating for us the French Revolution. And in verse 17, the concluding verse, where it says, for the great day of his wrath is come, we're suggesting that this is basically a reference to the time of the end, 1799. And the point is, if you take out the chapter distinctions, look at 7:1. And after these things, I saw the four angels standing on the four corners of the earth, holding the four winds of the earth, that the wind should not blow on the earth, nor on the sea, nor on any tree. And I saw another angel ascending from the east, having the seal of the living God. And he cried with a loud voice to the four angels to whom it was given to hurt the earth and the sea, saying, hurt not the earth, neither the sea, nor the trees, till we have sealed the servants of our God in their foreheads. So, first step, is to say, my, you know, the way we're lining this out is that it's bringing out, and other brothers have said this before us, that if the French Revolution had gone unchecked, the revolution would have continued to sweep over the rest of Europe and would have brought the violence upon the rest of the city, the other nine-tenths, if you will, look at that, and brought Christendom down ahead of schedule, so that the Lord stopped the spread of the French Revolution outside of France, because it wasn't the time yet. And that destructive nature of tearing down Christendom, which they did in France, that was stopped until the 144,000 are completely sealed, which is still ongoing. But as soon as they're sealed, then the four winds are let loose. Then you continue what started in the French Revolution to sweep over the rest of Christendom. So when we read these verses, there's a couple of clues right in the symbols, which help us identify that this is referring to the French Revolution, a partial destruction, but not the complete destruction as seen elsewhere in the Revelation. So look at Revelation 8, verse 1. 8:1. And when he had opened the seventh seal, there was silence in heaven about the space of an hour. So you see that the seventh seal being opened is separated from the sixth seal by this seventh chapter information. So what's in the seventh chapter, that is actually taking place after the seventh seal is open. So the brethren have worded it that the seventh chapter is like a parenthetical thought inserted between the sixth seal and the seventh, as it were, to show you that the Lord had to stop the French Revolution during the sixth seal period, because it would have derailed the remainder of the plan. Now it's very interesting that the Lord, of course, foreknew the French Revolution, and he was definitely allowed it to take place, because it's pictured in the book of Revelation at least two other places. But who is it that started that series of events that led to the French Revolution? Think of Revelation 12. Who started it? It was that serpent casting the water out of the mouth. Right? And the earth drunk it up. So the point is, Satan started it. The Lord allowed it, foreknew it. It did do what he wanted in France, and he used that as a picture of what will happen in the future. But the Lord put the brakes on it from spreading any further. Okay, Ruth, you did raise your hand as I was talking. Did you have something more?
I was going to say that in Revelation 12, but I was also thinking when I was studying this before, it was a little hard for me to understand how something that happened in France would be so pivotal. But really, I just got done reading this book that Debbie gave me called The World in 1800, and it explains, it's really a big, thick book, but it explains how the French Revolution changed the whole world, every continent, and how significant it was that there was really the beginning of the world as we know it. And so that makes a lot more sense when you look at it from that perspective, that it would be so significant that it would show up in Revelation several times over.
Yeah, very good. Yeah. If the conclusion of the French Revolution was the conclusion that brought us to the time of the end, It's very fascinating. So, this is kind of like just help in my mind. It helps understand the context of our sixth chapter, verses 12 to 17, and how the French Revolution brought us right up to, that great day of his wrath is come. That was the sentiment of the world because of the French Revolution. The rest of the European kings and queens and such, they were all mortified. They thought this was just going to sweep over. And guess what? It wasn't all that long later. A century later, it did. But nonetheless, it started to affect changes as the monarchies were seeing that their superstitious hold of the divine right of kings to rule was being challenged by this Napoleon, by putting the Pope in prison and him dying there. Again, a very scriptural point that we know that has been referenced. So we notice that the one of the phrases in verse 12, it was a great earthquake, but it's not the greatest earthquake that ever was. That has to wait for the Armageddon crash in Revelation 16, the seventh plague poured out. That's the greatest earthquake that ever was. The city fell in three parts, and it never came up again. But here, we see in verse 14 that the heaven departed as a scroll, but the heaven is singular. This isn't the two sides, the Protestant and papal ends rolling together, like we have in, I believe, Isaiah. But the point is, it's a singular roll. It's a singular heaven. It was rolling up. The papacy was what was thrown out in France because of the French Revolution. So we have this depiction of what was yet to come. However, Brother Russell does make comments on some of these parts of these verses as French Revolution and parts of it as the Armageddon crash. That's what I included in the email I sent out. That was item number 3, to give you a heads up to look at the expanded comments and read how Brother Russell sometimes uses parts of these verses to give it a future application from the sixth stage of the church, from the French Revolution. He gives it at the end. But you notice that's part of the problem is the seventh seal hasn't been opened yet. So it's hard to put events of the sixth seal, put it in the future still from us today, and yet we haven't even got the seventh seal opened yet. I hope that's making sense. So let me take a breath. Comments on any of this so far? Brother Chris.
Yeah, an aspect we usually don't integrate into this because these pictures have so much detail here to try to absorb is that just prior to the French Revolution was the American Revolution, which kind of inspired the French Revolution because they were, you know, Benjamin Franklin was going back and forth constantly. But so at the very time that the Lord was giving us this snapshot of things to come, the mindset of the people, how quickly things can change in the environment, how the governments around you can just be taken out in a very, very short time. So we know all that. But at the very same time, the American Revolution was paving the way for the harvest that would come of the gospel age, giving the gospel age messenger, a stage, a platform to be able to present it for what we might incorporate into chapter 7 and the information to the church to give them strength and comfort and all that good stuff. Over.
Oh, very good. That's so true and fully agrees. And funny, the man the Lord used to help stop this French Revolution from spreading further was Napoleon Bonaparte, because he wanted to be an emperor. So he went back to trying to be like a monarch, and then he brought, after he kills the Pope in prison, as it were, he dies in prison, he imprisoned two of them, one of them died. lo and behold, he brings the Pope back so that he could be at the coronation ceremony. But, you know, he was an onlooker, but he was there to make the party look a little bigger. But the Lord used that Napoleon to take down papacy right on the heels of the French Revolution, which was taking it down, but turn around and revive him enough to have a figurehead there. So he could stop, as it were, the French Revolution, get himself installed as emperor, Josephine Empress, and then he ends up getting imprisoned himself. But very interesting sequences. Sister Wincy.
Verse 13, the stars of heaven fell unto earth. It reminds me of Revelation 12, where during the third stage of the church, third part of the stars fell onto earth. I remember it was the ecclesiastical heaven. I'm not sure that I pronounce it properly. Can we say the same expression here? Is it applicable here? It's a question.
Yes, it is. Yeah, it's showing Ruth's comment. I think it's one that's quite often used, showing that in the French Revolution, the clergy, who were a mixed bag at this time, the harvest hadn't come yet, so you had some that were decent and those who weren't, of course. But they were cast down regardless. So that the Bible was cast out, the sun and the moon, and the clergy leadership was cast down in the French Revolution. So there's a similarity there. Let's see. I'm missing someone else's hand. Sister Debbie?
Yeah, I just wanted to mention that when the sun became black as sackcloth of hair. I just thought that was an interesting phrase, and I was looking it up. And apparently they used to make sackcloth out of black goat's hair so that the sunlight couldn't get into whatever was in the bag. You know, like it was like a sack sometimes used for stuff, you know, and they didn't want the sun to get at it. They would put it in this sack. You know, of course you had people wearing sackcloth and ashes and or sackcloth, and it's also a sign of grief and mourning, which I guess the Lord would show that when the sun became black, no light could get out at all, and it's a mournful thing. So that's just some thoughts I had about it. Over.
All right. Thank you. Very good. Brother Chris?
No, I was just going to say, sometimes we say hair symbolizes glory. So the glory of the gospel message and hope, as it was the good news, is covered in, you know, like in black, just as Sister Debbie said, no light coming from it. But the glory of it, so close to it being revealed to the world of mankind in just a couple more stages of the church was, you know, taken out. So.
Oh, very good. So true. Let's take an aside here about the French Revolution in the book of Revelation, and let's look at Revelation, the 11th chapter, Revelation 11. And let's see here. Sister Betty, can you read for us? Revelation 11 and verses 13, just 13.
Revelation 11, 13. And in that hour there was a great earthquake, and a tenth of the city fell, and 7,000 people were killed in the earthquake, and the rest were terrified and gave glory to God of heaven. Over.
Okay, thank you. So the setting is in the sixth trumpet still, which is equivalent to our period of the sixth seal being open. And this great earthquake it only took down one-tenth of the city. So it suggested like there were the 10 horns of the Roman beast, 10 powers. So one-tenth, or that is France, experienced this great earthquake. And the men's 7,000, slain of men 7,000, if you look at the marginal reading on, at least in the Oxford, let's see, get my words right, the names of men. The thought is it's titles. So 7,000 titles for men were slain. That's talking about the removal of the clergy and the royalty, the aristocracy, all these various titles that the people, that men held, which they used and abused to keep the common peasantry under subjection. That was all removed because the French Revolution was a great leveler. And so that there's the thought of that. And the rest were affrighted. And so we just wanted to bring out that this shows this aspect in the same time frame of the French Revolution taking down France, the one-tenth of the city. Any comments on this verse? Let's take a look at another one. Revelation 16, and let's see, Brother Jeff, can you read there for us, please? Revelation 16, and verse 17 through 20, please.
The seventh angel poured out his bowl into the air, and out of the temple came a loud voice from the throne, saying, "It is done." Then there came flashes of lightning, rumblings, peals of thunder, and a severe earthquake. No earthquake like it has ever occurred since mankind has been on earth. So tremendous was the quake. The great city split into three parts, and the cities of the nations collapsed. God remembered Babylon the Great, and gave her the cup filled with the wine of the fury of his wrath. Every island fled away, and the mountains could not be found.
All right. Any comments on this to open up, Brother Jeff?
No.
Okay. Anyone like to outline these events here for us? Ruth?
Well, it's at the end of the plagues, which is at the end of the, after the church is complete, I believe, because, I can't remember why. Anyway, so that's not a good thing to bring up, but.
I agree with you.
What?
It's
what?
True. I agree with you. The church is complete.
Yeah, okay. So it's the final earthquake and the great city falls and the cities of the nations fell. And the three parts are the beast, false prophet, and dragon. And they all unravel. The city of the nations fell. And this is the point when Great Babylon's sins are complete and she gets the final fierceness of God's wrath. And then every island fled away, all the small republics and all the nations, the kingdoms, mountains were not found. And she never recovers from this. This is the final fall. And I like the thought about men blasphemed God because of the plague of the hail, that it's the false God that they recognize of the papacy and the Pope. And because back in what we had just read in 11, they, where is it, 11?
11:10, I think?
13.
Oh.
After the 7,000 were slain, and the remnant were affrighted and gave glory to the God of heaven, that was the Pope, because the papacy was reestablished in France. And so they went back to, you know, they were so scared by the French Revolution, they went back to recognizing the church. So here they finally recognized that they blasphemed God because of the plagues, and they recognized that papacy is false. That's the best I can do with it. Over.
No, that's very good. We appreciate that. All right, further comments? Oh, then.
Along with Sister Ruth's comments, it's verse 13 that tells us that those three parts, the dragon, beast, and false prophet, and so they, in their efforts to keep the present evil world, the ruling powers together and keep their power, they in fact do the opposite of what they want. They bring the people to Armageddon, which destroys these three powers, first the religious, then the civil part of Christendom comes down. But in verse 20, a difference between the French Revolution and this great earthquake is that every island fled away and the mountains were not found. And so it concludes by telling us that this earthquake brings the total destruction of this present evil world. Over.
All right, very good. So, brethren, further comments, sorry. So just tying it all together, what we've looked at in these verses is that the French Revolution took down one-tenth of this great city, Christendom, and yet the Lord put the brakes on that revolution from spreading to the remainder of the city. If you want an expression, the remaining nine-tenths of the city, the other 10 horns or the other 10 toes. But the Lord put the brakes on it because he still had to have the final feet members of the church be developed under the similar circumstances as the brethren that had preceded. So there was a stopping, a holding of the four winds. And the Lord used Napoleon to take down papacy at the appropriate time, which is true, and he did. And yet he reinstalled papacy shortly thereafter, and it helped serve the purpose of putting the brakes on that French Revolution from spreading, because it wasn't the right time. So that earthquake singular of the French Revolution is a picture of this great earthquake yet future, of which there had never been so great an earthquake as since man's been on the earth. Showing this future revolution ahead of us that takes down Christendom, the complete city. And as the friends have brought out, no government comes up in its place. And if you don't have a government, what do you end up with? But anarchy. And that's the depiction of the fire that follows after the earthquake. So, okay, that's why I was hoping, you know, part of what we wanted to develop here was why we're thinking that what we're reading in Revelation, the sixth chapter under the sixth seal being opened, was confined to the French Revolution and did not depict the end time events themselves, but rather was a foreshadowing of what those end time events would be. So today.
Were you still going to go verse by verse, or are you just looking at this as a whole?
I'm going to go verse by verse, but I'm going to Matthew 24 right now. Thank you. Brother Chris, could you read in Matthew 24, verse 29 to 31, please.
Matthew 24, verses 29 to 31. Immediately after the tribulation of those days shall the sun be darkened, and the moon shall not give her light. And the stars shall fall from heaven, and the powers of the heavens shall be shaken. And then shall appear the sign of the Son of Man in heaven, and then shall all the tribes of the earth mourn, and they shall see the Son of Man coming present in the clouds of heaven with power and great glory. And he shall send his angels with a great trumpet, and they shall gather together his elect from the four winds, from one end of heaven to the other.
So, Brother Chris, you can see the reason why we want to look at this, because we want to harmonize it, because so much of the phraseology is similar, but the time setting is, again, different. So could you start us out with that?
He's walking us through the gospel age, and it gets to verse 29, and then following these other events of false prophets and false Christs, and if it was possible to deceive the very elect, it would, but it won't. Then he says, immediately after the tribulation of those days. So after the 1260 years, as it were, it has been completed. The gospel light is darkened, and the moon doesn't give her light, and the stars of heaven fall from. So that goes back to this this French Revolution picture, when this is like following, you know, the 1260 years ended, just as you said, with Napoleon basically ending it. And then the French Revolution brings about this prophecy, and then shall appear the sign of the Son of Man in heaven. And the tribes of there shall mourn, and they shall, I misread my little note there, but they shall discern the Son of Man coming in the clouds and heaven of power and great glory. So it does show the final, like the final feature of the gospel age, Babylon dealt with. Over.
Okay, very good, Brother Chris. Thank you. And this is a challenge. That was right on, because we're just jumping in to Matthew 24, we have to rely on our previous studies from the fourth volume on this to help get our perspective on this. Brother Jeff? No? Okay. So, as Brother Chris brought out, in verse 29, when it says, immediately after the tribulation of those days, and as he said, that ended the 1260 years. So this is showing something toward the end of or about 1799. It's about that time, but it's after the tribulation of the long gospel age tribulation that was delineated earlier in the chapter between verses 8 through 13. And it's after that tribulation that you then have the end time come, the time of the harvest or separation. And it will be after that separation takes place. The little flock are all gathered out. The wheat are all gathered to the heavenly garner, that you're going to have the greatest tribulation that ever was since there was a nation. And that is Verse 21. For then shall be great tribulation such as was not since the beginning of the world to this time nor ever shall be. And except those days were shortened, there would no flesh be saved. But by the elect's sake, those days shall be shortened. So obviously this great tribulation is still ahead of us. Otherwise no flesh would have been saved. So that's a future event. However, Jesus is saying there's this great trip. There is a tribulation that takes place all during this gospel age, But when you get to my parousia, my presence time, there is going to be this unique feature of separating, harvesting, and gathering my saints to the carcass. I'll give you a servant to give you meat in due season so you can figure out from the Bible what's going on with the times and get yourselves prepared before that greatest tribulation, which is yet future. But that gets us to this aspect on the sun and the moon and the stars. And you'll remember in the fourth volume, Brother Russell gave it two applications. He gave it a literal application and he gave it a symbolic application. Anybody want to tackle either one of those? Ronan?
Very feeble, they will try. We'll go with the easier one, in my mind anyways. The sun being the gospel, the moon, the types and shadows from the Old Testament, and the stars would be the apostles and true teachers of the gospel message. And so they're darkened. The moon doesn't give its light, and the stars shall fall from heaven. So we see that this is a time during the harvest of the gospel age, and there were also natural events, as you brought out, that actually there was there was the great darkness when the sun was eclipsed. That was, I think, on the east coast of the United States, and at least in and so just these natural events, as well as the spiritual events or truths that fulfilled this particular prophecy here in Matthew 24. Over.
All right, very good. And so with the literal suggestions he made, the darkening of the sun was May 19th, 1780. And then with the stars, that was November 3rd, 1833. That's my notes from the fourth volume. And of course you have them as well. But the more symbolic emphasis, the symbolic emphasis which Brother Dan outlined, which we've been talking about, that to my mind is far more satisfying because it's in keeping with the other symbolic expressions that Jesus was giving. But nonetheless, these did take place, so we did want to recognize that. And okay. I'm going to leave that at that in the French Revolution, there was a rejection of the Bible and casting out of the clergy. And during the time of the harvest, there's many who are casting out the Bible because of higher criticism. And you and I know that. How many people can we stop and have a sincere talk about the Bible in America? One of the more religious countries of the world, actually, supposedly. And you can't hardly bring it up. And now if you bring it up in the Bible Belt, you'll get people to talk with you, but they're going to want you to join the church, which believes in Trinity and hellfire. So it's not very useful. They're rejecting the lessons of present truth. They're rejecting the true light of Scripture. So, okay, I'm going to leave that at that. Any other comments here on Matthew 24? Okay, so then if we go back to our Revelation 6, where our time is leaving us, but I think that was the groundwork that I thought it would serve us well to consider before we go verse by verse with the symbols to hopefully help us as we interpret that. If you think this is the French Revolution, I think we could find a satisfactory answer. If you don't think that this applies, you'll have to have another way of applying it. That's all. So that's okay. Everyone have their own opinion. Any comments so far? Okay. So go ahead, Brother Adi. Why don't you relate to us what you got going there?
I just found this on Ancestry. It's called The Night the Stars Fell. It looks like a very good article on what Brother Russell was talking about. It says 150,000 meteors, about 30 per second, dance in plain view during the peak storm. And people were, at that time, the South was a hotbed for national religious revival known as the Second Great Awakening. Some awoke terrified, fearing it was the end of days as predicted by Bible verses, and the stars of heaven shall fall. So it's very interesting.
Okay. Thank you. Very good. All right. So our Revelation 6 and verse 12, and I beheld when he had opened the sixth seal, and lo, there was a great earthquake. And that's an easy interpretation. We're saying it's the French Revolution. The sun became black as sackcloth. That was already brought out. The gospel in the New Testament was in mourning because the French Revolution threw out papacy and they threw out the baby with the bathwater. They threw out the Bible. And the moon became as blood. They just seem like bloody sacrifices, and they are a bunch of slaughter. And they didn't recognize the typical nature and the beauty of the Old Testament. The stars of heaven fell into the earth. That is that the clergy was cast out, or if you like, you could have the apostles were cast out, because you remember in Revelation 12, 1, the woman had a crown of 12 stars, which are the 12 apostles who are leading lights. So the apostles' writings of the New Testament were also rejected. That's another way. Either way, it works. And there might be a third way, but there's two possibilities. And it says, the stars of heaven that fell to the earth, even as a fig tree casteth her untimely figs when she is shaken of a mighty wind. So comments, we'll have to close with this. I'll entertain a quick comment on this, but we'll come back to this in two Sundays. Comment on the casting of the untimely figs. Ruth?
Well, one way to look at it is that the judgment on Babylon wasn't ripe yet. So when this was like a sample judgment of what was coming, but the fig tree, like when Jesus cursed the fig tree in Jerusalem, that meant that their judgment was complete and they were ready to be cast off. Well, now it was untimely. The fig tree of Babylon, you know, picturing Babylon's judgment, wasn't ready yet to be reaped. But if some of the figs fell because of this sample judgment, the Lord was like a warning. I don't know if that makes any sense, but it does to me.
That makes sense to me. And it's very fitting, this mighty wind of as it were, in connection with the with this French Revolution. In chapter 7, it's the four winds that are held back from blowing, showing that these winds show this destructive power, at least in a simple sense. So, okay, we'll leave it at there. We'll come back to that. And Sister Debbie, hold your thought till 2 weeks from now. Write it down.